My guest today is Drew Miller. Drew, how you doing?
Very well.
What do you do?
I make Windows software for GitHub.
You work for GitHub?
Yep.
Cool. That's a cool company, right?
That's what I hear. I'm pretty darn happy.
Oh, that's an important thing. What's going on at GitHub?
Oh, there's so much going on in GitHub. I work on the GitHub for Windows client. One of our goals with that is to make Git much more approachable in GitHub for people who don't have as much experience with Git. But in general, with the site all up, there's so much going on. We recently released two-factor authentication, which was huge. Mm-hmm. Security is a big deal, and we're constantly iterating and improving on the site, making it a better experience.
That is cool. The Windows integration is cool because I think. Visual Studio developers were slow to adopt Git, and now it's the new hotness.
And they're still a little behind, but it's rapid growth. I'm so excited to see more and more Windows developers using Git. Obviously I'm biased, but I think it's a great tool, and GitHub makes it that much better. So that's kind of my mission, is to keep adding tools and to educating and to teaching people so that they find the goodness that's already there.
Cool. You're passionate about testing, are you not?
I am. Before working at GitHub, I worked at Microsoft. I was a tester and then later a test manager for the ASP.NET team, specifically working on ASP.NET MVC. I made the switch to test after many years as a developer because of that passion. Kind of a mix of being frustrated with how people tested stuff and the exchange between developer and tester and the flaws and kind of costs of that exchange on the one hand, and on the other, just in general, I'm a big believer about all developers implicitly test, at least, as the part of making software, and I want people to do that better. If you're going to be doing it anyway, let's help you do it better.
Yeah. So you're preaching to the choir a lot here. I'm a big believer that good testing is essential to software quality, and in the long run, it's way cheaper than just seat of the pants things that I was doing for years.
Yeah.
But we were having a conversation earlier where you were saying things that that made me think a little bit. That some of the tests, some of the things that I think about testing, are different than what you're thinking about.
Sure. So it's funny, I talk to developers about testing a lot. It's just something I seek out. And one of the first things I have to do almost every time is establish that we're talking about the same thing. And often we're not. When I first started developing software, developers didn't really think about testing. This was even before TDD and unit testing had really come up and become a popular thing. And so they thought of testing as something other people do. And that has changed. But what developers think of as testing tends to be programmatic testing. Things like unit testing, integration testing, even like automating test agents like browsers in the clients, and that's all goodness. I mean, it's great for developers to be doing that stuff, but we also, whether we realize it or not, tests the way that users use the software. As you're finishing up a feature, you have no choice but to occasionally, if you're in Visual Studio, hit F5 and see that things run, or use that form a little bit to see that it works.
Developer will do that.
Right.
You
can't really develop working software without doing that some. And so one of my goals, one of the things I like to do, is to help people be more disciplined about that, to do it, to hopefully do it better. I mean, that's my goal.
How does one become more disciplined about hitting F5?
Well, it's a lot more than hitting F5 is the big one of the big parts of it. So just like we have patterns for developing software, we have approaches that are well known. You even if you don't completely agree with them, you have a framework to kind of grow on, whether you're doing Agile, whether you're doing one of these other type of techniques. And testing has a lot of the similar things, but developers aren't aware of it. One of the things I like to teach people is about some things testers are normally think about that developers don't, things like heuristics and using heuristics for testing, exploratory testing.
Heuristics is what?
Heuristics, it's a word that has a long history. Applied to testing, it's...
It's the H in the HAL computer.
Right.
2001 Space Odyssey.
James Bach is a tester that influenced me heavily and influenced how we test in Microsoft. He defines it as a fallible method for solving a problem or making a decision.
A fallible, so it can be followable?
Fallible, absolutely.
A fallible, so it can fail.
Right. It, like anything, it's a technique. It's not a prescription, right? It's a prompt. It's not a practice. They're little things like if I know I'm going to be doing domain testing, little mnemonic triggers and guidelines for these are the types of things I need to think about when I'm doing domain testing. Mm-hmm. And so by using a list of heuristics, it helps you think about the full spectrum of testing that we're not normally inclined. You know, we have short memories. Our brains are really good at pattern matching, but our memory, our active memory, especially when we're focusing on things, is very limited. So having a good list of heuristics helps us train our mind as we go through testing. And so that's one example of using discipline. So when I'm testing a feature, I pop it up with F5, and then I have to decide what to do, right? What comes next after F5? Maybe sometimes just seeing it run is good enough, but most of the time you need to interact with it a little bit, and you need to make decisions about how I'm going to interact with it. And that's where these lists of heuristics, things like, I'm going to try this type of data, I'm going to do this interaction. It's a list of things to tell you how to interact with the system to find
problems. A lot of that's dependent upon the application that you're writing, right?
Right. So not every heuristic applies to every type of software.
Well, give me an example of A, of N. Heuristic.
So,
is it A or N?
It'd be an heuristic. I guess it'd be an A heuristic. those H words in Greek are tough. So an example of a heuristic is with domain testing, using different kinds of data as inputs in the domain. You know, don't just try the obvious stuff. Another category of heuristics that I really encourage developers to think about that they don't always is flow testing. You know, as users, they're going to pop an application open and keep it open all day, and they're going to do all these types of actions and behaviors and transactions. As developers, we tend to focus on one thing. So one of the heuristics with flow testing is to leave the application up over time without resetting it. You know, these kinds of things that I can go through the list and be like, okay, that doesn't apply to this particular situation. I don't need to leave the app up all day because I'm developing a web app and it's stateless. But it's these lists of things, and I can go through and figure out this does apply to me, this doesn't apply to me. And there's hundreds of these things.
Okay. So when I'm on larger projects, generally there's a testing group, and that testing group has a script. This is not quite a script. This is like a step below that. It's more of
that segues
a pattern.
Perfectly into the other thing I mentioned, which is exploratory testing.
Okay.
So, you know, when I got into this business, everyone was about scripted testing, right? You write this big plan of point by point how I'm going to test the system. Exploratory testing is the dual of that. You don't start with any script. You have a charter. You have what I want to accomplish while I'm testing this. What is the core thing I'm testing? And then you just decide one test, the most important test, and you test it. And then you use the information you learn while testing that one thing to decide the next thing to test, and you just iteratively explore the product one test at a time instead of thinking a lot of ahead of time. And I find that's especially useful for developers who are testing because it's very similar to the ad hoc type of testing that we naturally do as developers, mm-hmm. but adds, again, that layer of discipline with a charter, with focusing on one test at a time iteratively, and then adding a time constraint to it, which is another common aspect of exploratory testing.
Okay. If I'm doing automated testing, if I'm doing unit tests, integration tests, maybe even something with like Watton or some user interface type of automation, do I really need to do all this other stuff you're talking about?
Yeah, sure. I'll share a story with you that I think exemplifies why. So one of the websites I worked on while I was at Microsoft had a login form like every website in the world. And test teams love login forms. They're really easy to automate, right? You know, I have a case where I put good stuff in and it goes to a new page, and I have a case where I put bad stuff in and it shows me an error message. Really, really easy to automate. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we shipped, and then we got a bunch of reports, and we automated it. We got a bunch of reports that login form was failing. Our test passed. We knew it should be working, so we went and tried it ourselves, and it worked, and we didn't understand what was going on. And we found out that what was happening was the users were putting a username and a bad password in, but they were stuck on the login page. It didn't do anything.
And they assumed that it was successfully logging.
Right, because they had no input.
Because there was no error message.
What had happened is a front-end developer had accidentally floated an error message off the screen. Oh. And so, you know, automation caught that error message was still in the outputted HTML. It was in the right place in the DOM, but visually it was wrong, something you and I would catch in a heartbeat.
Right.
That's a really hard thing to automate. That speaks to, in testing, what we call oracles. How do you know something is true? So there's kind of two oracles going on there. There's an oracle of specification, which says the spec says that there should be an error message here,
okay.
right? But it fails the eye test, which is another oracle, actually seeing the thing.
Okay. What is an oracle?
So an oracle is just kind of the source of correctness. It's like the mechanism by which you decide if something is correct.
Okay.
So in the case of an error message, like, like there's a spec, or maybe I know what error messages should look like because I've used other login forms, and that's called an oracle of comparison. But, you know, it's a fancy academic test word for the thing that lets me know a thing is right or wrong.
Okay.
When you automate software, you need to think not only about automating the agent, right? Because we tend to just think about, I can automate the browser, I'm good to go. You're also implicitly automating these oracles. Some are easy, some are hard, and that's something you have to think about when you automate.
I see. Okay.
So that's a long way of answering. So yes, you should automate, but you also need to be very aware of the limitations of automation.
Hmm. What else?
What else? So that's kind of actually two of the three lessons that I, you know, there's three concrete.
That was the third one.
Yeah, so the three concrete things I try to get developers to do is, one, use heuristics, and there's a whole model I share with them that James Bach wrote, and we've customized it over the years. The second is exploratory testing. The third one is using brainstorming and checklists. So like when you're done with a feature and it's time to ship it or hand it off to the test team or whatever, you're trying to decide whether or not it's done. You just brainstorm, looking at it at a high level, the things you want to test. Not really specific test cases, but things like, does the validation work? Does it, you know, does login work at a high level? And using checklists. Like I was saying earlier, the mind can really only focus on four things remember four things when you're focused on a task. Mm-hmm. So by using checklists and by brainstorming ahead of time, it lets you have a kind of a safety net to come back up to as you test without missing things. The other, you know, that's the kind of the checklist part of it. The brainstorming part is important because when we make software, it's all about going from lots of narrow things to a whole, right? So we're taking little chunks, feature at a time, a unit at a time, over lots of iterations, and we're building a whole through that process. Testing is the exact opposite. We start with the whole, and we're constantly drilling down to the narrow and then having to come back up, drill down to a narrow specific thing and coming back up. Every time you do that, you're kind of channeling your brain into the specific, and it gets harder and harder to look at the whole. By brainstorming before we do that, we have a better picture of the whole to come back up to. So that's the third technique I encourage people to do.
Should people be writing these things down as they're like during the brainstorming, for example? Should I be brainstorming, take a bunch of notes, and have them ready?
Yes,
so that I know
that's what I'd like. Keep a checklist. Okay. Like with GitHub, when I first started working at GitHub and we did pull requests, you know, we would have kind of this, you know, we intended to test it, but we didn't record that anywhere, and so a lot of times that testing didn't happen very well. We started putting directly in the pull request the checklist of things to test, like a mini test plan, a high-level test plan with each pull request, and it made a huge difference. You know, the quality came up, everyone became invested in testing. It happened before the code went into master instead of after it went into master, and it's not just on GitHub. You can do something similar on any good ALM system, but attaching that checklist to the agent of change, whether it's code review or pull request or whatever, has a lot of value.
Okay. Anything we haven't talked about that we should?
From a testing perspective, I mean, you know, there's nothing. People doing those three things is, I think, like what I tell people is, if you start doing those three things and nothing else, I think the quality of your testing is going to, you know, really go much better. You're going to be a better tester through doing those things. You know, I encourage people to explore exploratory testing beyond that, kind of learn more about it. There's great books on it.
Can you recommend any books?
Basically, look at there's a book that Sinn Kainer and James Bach wrote, which is about context-driven testing. It's not specifically about exploratory testing, but it lays a lot of the foundation that would become that. And then Joanna Rothman, Lisa Crispin, both have some very good books on agile testing and exploratory testing.
Are you writing and publishing anything online or in print?
My family's too big to do that. I have five kids. Every year it comes up and people have asked me to, and it's just not the right time yet.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Drew, thanks so much.
Thank you. I love working on GitHub because it makes working on technology with your friends better than working alone.